Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hello, I'm Larry Mueller. Hey, you hear that applause? We're broadcasting from the Midwest Renewable Energy Association Fair. This is the 20th year, if I'm not mistaken, of the Energy Fair. Started out a little small, a little different, but now it is the largest energy fair in the world, I think. And I tell you what, the crowd here is wonderful. I've had a chance to walk around the tents this morning. I shook hands with a lot of people, many of whom listened to the show. That was really great to learn that the exhibitors here love Wisconsin Public Radio. And we have a great audience in the tent today, too, who I think also, for the most part, maybe love Wisconsin Public Radio. They certainly love gardening, and that's why we've decided to bring Ken Schrader in, because Ken knows a lot. He's Portage County Ag Agent. He's based at the courthouse in Stevens Point, Wisconsin. He's here to answer your questions about, well, we can talk about lawns. I'm sure we can talk a little about trees. We can talk about the garden, of course, the vegetable garden or the flower garden. And we certainly welcome your calls. Give us a ring at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. And for our audience in the tent today, if you have a question for Ken, feel free to raise your hand. Rhonda Fanning is here with a microphone, and when she sees your hand go up, she'll go over by you, and you can ask your question of Ken. So we really are really looking forward to this day. Ken, welcome.
Well, thank you, Larry. I'm glad to be here, and good morning, everyone.
Tell you what, it's great to have you here. As we think about this part of the country, or the state, I should say, gardening here a little different from the south, a little bit different from the far north. To be sure, people are like kind of chuckling about that. What kinds of issues are you seeing in this part of the state?
Well, first of all, I'd like to let everybody know that our office has actually moved. We are no longer in the courthouse.
Oh.
We have moved to the Ruth Gilfrey Center at 817 Whiting Avenue, still in Stevens Point, but a new location for us, great facilities there, so please come and visit us there for all the local people here. Okay, yes, as far as issues, you know, everybody smiles here, and if they've grown up here on the Central Sands area, they know that there are issues with water and drainage and keeping plants growing. But as far as calls that we get coming into the office, spring started out with a lot of activity as far as the eastern tent caterpillar is concerned. You drive along the highway and you see trees defoliated, and you see these little whitish, like
tents.
Tents, exactly.
That's
You know, they're webs, very dense webs, and we had a very large population this year. They seem to survive the winter quite well, and so you see a fair number of trees defoliated. The deal with that is, though, we're pretty much done. They're, at this point, there's not a whole lot you can do about them. They're pretty much full-grown caterpillars now. They're crawling around trying to find a place to pupate and go on to their next stage of life. So you'll see them walking across to driveways and lawn areas and stuff like that, just trying to find literally a place to hang out to pupate. So don't worry about those anymore. Your trees will likely recover, as even if they've been totally defoliated, a lot of times they'll re-leaf again.
Back.
So don't worry about that. The other one on the horizon then is gypsy moth, another caterpillar that's been very prevalent in the area. It's on its march sort of to the western side of the state. That's just beginning to show up now. The larvae are probably quite small, maybe a half inch or so in size. With the cooler spring that we've seen, they're a little bit slower in coming around, but they're going to be evident as they go along in the next 4 to 6 weeks. They'll grow considerably larger, and then you'll actually see them migrating from the trees and down the trunks of the trees and so forth. As far as identifying those, they have some really unique identification features. Those caterpillars will have pairs of dark blue dots on one end of the caterpillar and pairs of dark red dots on the other end of the caterpillar. So those are our gypsy moth caterpillars.
They're pretty easy to identify, actually.
They are. They are very unique as far as the caterpillars are concerned. You shouldn't have any problem figuring out what they are. But we're always at the extension office and give us a call. Same with any of the other county extension offices for those of you out there. Just give them a call. They'd be happy to help you out and identify things and provide some solutions.
All right. Well, I tell you what, we have lots of callers online, and we have a great audience here in the tent. So let's take some calls. And Eugene and Viola, we'll turn to you first. Hi, Eugene. Thanks for calling.
Good morning, Larry.
Morning.
I planted popcorn about 2.5 weeks ago, almost three weeks ago now. And it was a heritage corn. I got it given to me, and I didn't plant it very deep, but I've only got about two shoots coming up. Does that popcorn take a long time to start growing? That's the first question. The next one is I planted Indian corn, what I would call Indian purple Indian corn. What's the growing time on something like that?
All right. Let's see. Ken, you got an idea on that one?
Yeah, the popcorn issue, that tends to be a little bit slower to develop than what our field corn is. A lot of the field corn out there has been bred for its readiness to pop out of the ground and do well even in colder soils. Now, we've been experiencing a fairly cool spring, so I'm not surprised that you're having some slower germination there. As the temperatures have warmed up now, things should improve. The concern is that if you've had it in the ground for too long and the ground has been, soil has been fairly moist, you may have some seed rot. The other thing you might want to check out is if there was some seed corn maggots getting in that seed. So I'd suggest you go out there and dig a couple spots and see if the seed is still there, if it's intact, and what's happening. But I'm not surprised that it is somewhat delayed this year. The spring has been slow. We're seeing that throughout the area. As far as the Indian corn, that's hard to answer. I don't know the maturity for that corn, that variety.
So we can't help you out there, but thanks a lot for calling, Eugene. Appreciate the call. Sometimes I have a computer here, and I can look those things up while we're on the air, and I can sound really smart, but I don't have that today, so I can't sound so smart. Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling, Eugene. Appreciate it. Let's take some more calls. June in Arborvitae, it's your turn. Hi, June.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
My question is about beet seedlings. I understand that you get more than one sprout from each seed, and I'm wondering if I know I have to remove one of them. May I replant that a little farther away, or do I just have to throw it out?
Clarify, that was beet seedlings?
Beets. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Generally, unless you have separate seeds right and tight next to each other, don't worry about it. The point is, though, if you have things, you've seeded them out and you've got the plants kind of close, you do want to pull out some of the seedlings and create some nice space. Recommendations generally are on the seed packet as far as thinning. You can give it a try to transplant those additional seedlings. Generally, it's somewhat difficult. If you pulled it out, and the big thing is going to be paying attention to watering, not to overwater and not to underwater them. So give it a try and
see what happens.
Yes, good luck.
Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. And we'll take some more calls. You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. Or if you we have somebody in the audience with a question, feel free to raise your hand, and Rhonda Fanning will be right there to help out. George and Nina was wondering, he has a rose of Sharon and wants to transplant it to Cleveland. It's in the growing, and I assume Cleveland, Ohio. Or maybe it's Cleveland, Wisconsin. I don't think it makes a difference, but because it's in the growing season right now, can he do that now, or should he wait till after the bloom is over to do that?
Well, thoughts on transplanting. If you transplant when plants are blooming, you'll likely cause them to abort a lot of the flowers there. And so I would wait until after it's done blooming and then transplant, or better yet, wait until fall to transplant when it has, we're not getting into the real hot time of summer, and then it gets to be a challenge to keep things alive. But if there are no other options, go ahead and do it now. Pay a lot of attention to the amount of water that you're supplying. When you do dig it up, dig it carefully and try to avoid damaging too many of the roots.
Okay, that makes sense. And we have a question from our audience here in the tent.
My name is Peg from Houghton, Michigan, and I have a question about tree peonies.
Okay.
I put them in. They're 2 years old, and I'm curious. They're coming up like a bush. And how do you make them come up like a tree?
Oh, okay.
And you've purchased just general peonies, sounds like. This is a tree peony, and it was already on a standard? No.
It was not on a standard. Okay.
Okay. The best is to have them, they need to be grafted on a standard, so I'm not sure if you actually got a tree peony or not. If it's coming up as a bush, if there is a certain stem in there that's somewhat woody, you can try to encourage that to continue to grow and take out some of the other shoots that may be coming from the root system. So take a closer look at it and see if there is a woody part to it. If there's no woody part and no difference in any of those shoots that are coming up.
If you've got one, she does, sounds like she does have one woody part. So Ken, your advice about just cutting the rest away?
Right. Yeah. Because they're likely coming from the root system, the shoots coming, and cut those back so that they don't continue to grow and compete with the plant that you actually want there.
Yeah, and then the plant you want is going to take off.
Yeah.
So because it won't have so much competition. All right, great question. Thank you. Let's see. Well, Frank in Cedarburg's up next. Frank, hello to you.
Good morning. I have a question. Since Dicistan is not available anymore, what can I use in place of it for a systemic poison?
What are you trying to work with? Or what are you
for,
worried about?
Cold crops.
Cold crops? And the what types of cold crops you've got?
Cauliflower,
okay.
And cabbages.
Okay, cauliflower and cabbages. All right, let's turn to Ken. Ken, what have we got?
Sure, okay. You have a couple of options there. I mean, multi-purpose insect killers such as Ortho's Bug Be Gone and Bayer Corporation also has some multi-purpose insect killers that you can use. If you're looking for something that is a little less toxic, we do have some actually organic product that's on the market, and it's called Spinosa, S-P-I-N-O-S-A. And it actually, the market name you're going to look for is in Bullseye or in Trust. I don't know how readily available that is on the market. It's fairly new, but look for that if you're looking for a little more organic alternative. Otherwise, permethrin generally is fairly effective as well. And depending on the critter, insecticidal soaps work as well.
All right.
Quite a few options.
Some great options. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. A lot of people here to thank today, and I wanted to do that a little bit because, Rhonda Fanning, Joe Hartke, Brittany Danda, Cheryl Gasser, Dave Potratz, all have been working, and then some others as well, to help make our programs here today at Wisconsin Public Radio as good as we can possibly make them. So I'm really appreciating of their work and appreciate you listening here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here as we broadcast from the Midwest Renewable Energy Association Fair. It's 20 years old this year, that fair, and younger than Ken Schrader, my guest, or I, by quite a bit. We've been around a lot longer than the fair, but I tell you what, the fair has gotten really big. There are lots of people here. You're going to love, if you can get out to Custer, Wisconsin, just look up the MREA online. If you can just Google it in there, go to a web search engine of some sort, Midwest Renewable Energy Association, and look it up. It's on all weekend. And believe me, there's a lot to see. My wife was after me to find out some more information about solar hot water heaters. I walked around this morning and found quite a bit about solar hot water heaters. And I've got a whole bunch of things to take home for her. And, you know, you might be interested in that, or you might be interested in a lot of the various programs, because there's educational programs going on, demonstrations all day, today, tomorrow, Sunday, lots going on. And in the meantime, if you have a question for Ken Schrader, Ken, our Portage County Extension Ag agent, he's based at the, used to be in the courthouse at Stevens Point, but now he is located, the offices are located in the Ruth Guilfrey Center in Stevens Point. So we're really pleased to have him with us to answer your gardening questions today. If you do have a question, again, the number is 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the audience and have a question, raise your hand, and Rhonda Fanning will be there, too, with a microphone. I thought she was here somewhere. Oh, there's Rhonda. Why don't you, we've got Rhonda here with a someone from the tent with a question.
Yeah. Hi, my name's Linda Rarick from New Holstein.
Hi,
and
Linda.
I brought a plant that I would like to see if you could identify. We have a large area around the house that I'm trying to get undesirables out of, but I'm not sure whether I should pull this or not. And so I was hoping you could find out what it is.
Well, you know what? Rhonda Fanning, we'll bring it right up here. Hand it over to Ken. And what do we? Well, we've got a green plant.
Yeah, it's kind of looks kind of thirsty right now, cutting, and it's got alternate leaves, and it's got veins that kind of curve out to the end, but never really meet. Sounds like a dogwood, but it's definitely not that, because it's a little more herbaceous than our dogwoods, and it's got some curly vine. Tendrils on it,
yeah.
So it's a vine of some sort, exactly, Larry. And then that's about as far as I'm going with it at the moment. I don't recognize the plant, but yeah, I can would gladly take it back to the office and see if I can figure out what it is.
I can give you a little more information. It'll have small clusters of white flowers in the spring, and in the fall of the year, the main vine gets real woody brown color, but stays smooth. And then the fruit is like little blueberries that are clustered into groups about a size of a golf
little
ball.
Little blueberries.
And they stick off away from the vine about maybe 3 or 4 inches. And they're separate stalk.
And it's smooth stemmed. It's not thorny. And
no.
Is it pretty well behaved?
Yeah, I've got three of them clustered together, and they haven't spread beyond
nice.
That. It
yeah.
is pretty, but...
They're pretty. Well, I'll tell you what, we don't have an answer here, but maybe somebody who's listening in will have an answer. And in any event, Ken could take it back to the office and probably come up with an answer for you.
Yeah, I'd be happy to give you my card, and you can give me a call, and I can...
All right, we'll deal with that. Let's go to Adam in Waupun next online. Adam, hi.
Hey, Larry and Ken. I got to say I'm really excited to come down to the fair later today, but in the meantime, I wanted to ask Ken about... nitrogen fixing of the legumes, and we just recently on the farm I'm working with, we underseeded our brassicas, well, our broccoli mainly, with some buckwheat, and so my question is whether you could underseed with something like clover and then expect the nitrogen fixing capabilities of the clover to then benefit what you're underseeding, or if you'd have to... you know, you'd have to kind of like till it in, or if you could just hoe it up and expect it to decompose in time so that the plants would then benefit from that nitrogen. And maybe you could just comment on nitrogen fixing and what's actually taking place there. It's my understanding that it's kind of like an interrelationship between, you know, bacteria in the soil and then these nodes that develop on the roots of the plants. I hope my question is clear enough.
Well, we'll give it a shot, Ken.
Yeah, you're on the right track. Boy, that's a big question, but actually it is very relevant. You can definitely interseed red clover or alfalfa in between your vegetable crops. We actually have a research project going on with UW-Madison and A.J. Busson, who's our vegetable crop specialist there. And he's been working on using legume crops intercropped between commercial vegetable crops, being his primary focus was sweet corn and snap beans. And so we're working out a system where you can plant the clover when you plant the snap bean, or I should say during the snap bean growing crop after it's about the three leaf stage, so that gets far enough
along.
Right. You need to. The challenge will be the competition with the crop that you want, so you can't plant it right away. Otherwise, the clover will kind of take over and smother that crop. But if you plant it later, you can go ahead and do that. Snap beans are doing just fine. And then in fall, just let it go, harvest the beans, and let the clover continue. Then in next year, they can no-till in sweet corn. They do have to use a burn down on the clover so that the corn gets a chance to take off. So it is definitely an opportunity for you there to harvest nitrogen from the atmosphere using those plants and make use of that within your intended crop there. So
perfect.
Great.
Perfect. Thanks a lot for calling, Adam. Appreciate it very much. Let's take another question from the audience. Hi.
Hi, Larry. This is Craig from Viroqua, Wisconsin.
Hey, Craig.
And in Viroqua, we have more organic farms per capita than anywhere in the United States.
Good for you.
And I want to congratulate you for your radio program. I like the way you take the calls in order, and I like the amount of people, callers you get on the air. And I would wish that the rest of the hosts would do the same thing as you do. You do a good job, Larry. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Oh, boy. What to say? Well, that was a very nice comment, and I'm embarrassed. I'm going to move on and take another call quick because I'm turning beet red here. Dave in Watertown, let's go to you. Hi, Dave.
Hi there. I got kind of a unique question. A couple of years ago, we had a conventional septic system put in. So it's not a mound. It's actually the conventional drainage field. And it's a large area of the lawn that we'd like to use for a vegetable garden. But the question that I've got is that an issue being over a drainage field as far as any issues with the vegetables getting into, anything like that? I know they're typically going to be a little bit shallower root systems. But do you know anything about that? And I guess I'll take my answer off air.
Sure. I guess I wouldn't recommend doing it for a couple of reasons. You know, you've got this mound system there, and you need to have a cover crop on there year-round. Otherwise, you're going to get erosion on that mound that you have a hard time dealing with. So I'd highly recommend not doing it. And also from the standpoint of the potential there, I mean, like you said, a lot of the crops may be shallow-rooted, but I would avoid that situation as far as at all costs.
You know, at a mound system, my understanding is that prairie plants can work pretty well on a mound system. They're going to really hold the soil in.
Right. If you don't want to have to mow it all the time, you can do something like that, and that does very well. So, you know, standard is you're running either turf grass mixes on there, or you can do prairie plants, something a little more ornamental like that. That's just fine. Yes, absolutely.
Well, let's take another question from the audience here. Hi.
Hi, my name's Valerie. I'm from Honey Creek, Wisconsin. And it's not a question, it's just a quick comment for the first caller who was wondering about thinning her beets and being able to replant the thinnings. What I do instead is I just cut the tops off and wash them off good and either have them as a salad or steam them up and eat them like spinach. And then you don't feel like you're wasting them.
That is a great point. Let's give her a hand. Hey.
Great suggestion.
I like that idea. And they're tender and they're very, very good. That's a wonderful idea. A great way to beat not only beets, but a lot of other things as well. So we appreciate that. Let's take another call. And Chris in Lake Geneva is up next. Hi, Chris.
How you doing?
Great.
Enjoy the show. I have two quick questions. One, I have an ornamental peach, a weeping peach of some sort, and the leaves are getting kind of reddish and puckered, and then they eventually die off and fall off. I'm wondering if you had any ideas what that might be.
What was that again?
Peach.
The peach. The leaves are getting reddish and falling off?
Yeah, they're kind of like getting puckered and misshapen, and then they eventually fall off.
Do they have a lot of curling on them?
Yes.
Okay. One possibility would be herbicide damage. I don't know if it's anywhere near your lawn, and if you're applying weed and feed, 2,4-D is a common product in there, and that could cause some damage, causing leaf curling. The other thing I'd look at is, if it's not that, and the reddish on the edges could be just simple signs of stress. Is it getting enough water? Otherwise, fertility-wise, but likely, I can't imagine you are short on phosphorus out there. So I would look more towards the cultural things such as moisture and possibilities of herbicide damage.
I'm trying to think of insect damage, but I don't know that the insects would damage would cause this the color change the way it did.
Yeah, but there are some. You're correct, Larry, in that caused the leaf curling. So that's also another thing that you could look for under those leaves if they are there's a leaf curling insect causing them to curl up. But if it's generally across the whole plant, then likely not that insect.
So. Yeah. You could take it into your county extension office. They could take a look at it there.
Absolutely. Take a cutting of that and take it into your county extension office and challenge them with it. So.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's take another call. Ken in Elkhorn, we are turning to you now. Hi, Ken.
Larry and Ken, appreciate the show. I've got a couple Austrian pines in my backyard. For the last couple of years, the tips are green, and as you go on the branches, as you go more towards the trunk, they get brown. I looked it up on the internet, and I forget what the name of it was, but it seems to be a common disease with Austrian pine. I'm wondering, they didn't give anything that I could use on it, but would 7, I believe that's made by Ortho, would 7 take care of that, or am I... should I be looking for something else?
No, that's 7 is an insecticide. It's not going to do anything unless you definitely have an insect problem. And I'm going to question whether or not you even have an issue there. Pine trees and spruce trees and so forth are evergreens. However, they do drop their leaves, and they do have an annual leaf drop, and it varies from species to species as to how many years they retain those needles. They grow a new set every year, and then some will retain their leaves for 5 years. Some actually have turnover in 3 years. So that brand new leaf that came out this year, or needles that came out this year, may be falling off in 3 years from now or 5 years from now. So if it's inside the tree, the outside parts of the branches look just fine, and there should be no need to be concerned. If it does seem to be an overall thinning of that crowd, you might want to look a little bit closer at it. We've had some challenges with drought stress over the last couple of years, here on the Sands in particular. You might have got a little wet down that way last June, the way I understand. But still, at some point, things tend to dry out, and sometimes they stay dry a little bit too long. That's provide stress for the tree, but take a closer look at it. See if there may be indications of insects on there, as well as check out the trunk and pay attention to the amount of water that tree is getting. Last resort, again, contact your local extension office. That's what they're there for. We're happy to help out. Whole purpose of us being there is to provide research-based information to the general public where you live and work. So that's my commercial for UW Extension.
Yeah, sometimes you can email in sometimes and questions. It's always great if you can take a picture so that the agents and so forth can see better. Or if you sometimes can bring a branch in. You wouldn't want to bring a branch in probably on an Austrian pine, but...
Well, you can actually, not the whole branch, but you can bring in the tip of it and at least, just one small branch that's showing an area that's healthy and an area that's not looking so good. So that's always helpful. If you just bring in a dead branch, we're kind of stumped, left out in the cold. So.
Thanks, Ken. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. We will take some more calls here. Again, the number for you to join in, 1-800-642-1234. Jim in Green Bay is up next. Hi, Jim.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a question in reference to a compost. I have a wonderful compost pile, and I have a lot of worms in there, and I just noticed the other day I also have a nice big anthill developing. Will those ants damage the worms at all?
No, they're not going to cause any harm. They're more of a disturbance to you than anything else. So my question is, with that compost, is it just getting started? You know, the question is, if that's hot enough, those ants aren't going to want to be there. But otherwise, you know, I wouldn't worry about it. If you wanted to heat it up a little bit more, add some more nitrogen, some more lawn clippings, other green stuff, and then mix it up and make sure it stays moist enough. Otherwise, just let it go, do its thing. Stir it if you want to move it off where the ants are coming from and not worry about them.
And thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Jane in Wausau is looking for an organic way to encourage her roses to bloom. What do you think about that, Ken?
Well, roses tend to be a big challenge, especially if you're using the hybrid teas. And they're pretty particular. From an organic standpoint, I'd encourage you to use a lot of compost. Make sure you're adding compost on a regular basis. That will take care of the fertility end of things. From the insect end of things, there you probably need to look towards insecticidal soaps, neem oil, and products like that are considered organic.
Okay. Let us take some more calls. Jeremy and Fond du Lac, we're on to you next. Hi, Jeremy.
Hi, how are you doing?
Great.
My question has to do with heritage seeds or seeds that aren't genetically mutated. Where's the best place or easiest place you could steer me to pick some of those up to plant in my garden?
Well, there's one, the seed Savers Exchange in Decorah, Iowa, would be my first comment. And Ken, I don't know if you'd have anything to add to that, but certainly the Seed Savers Exchange would help.
Right. That was the primary one that came to mind. Otherwise, I would ask around locally and see if anyone has some that they'd like to share with you that they've been growing over the years. And I'm sure if you did an online search, you may find some others, but the primary one at the moment is Seed Savers Exchange in Decorah, Iowa. They've been around for quite a number of years and are quite well known.
Mm-hmm. So there you have it, Jeremy. Thanks a lot for that question, and we'll take some more questions here. I'm looking around the audience, see if anybody has a question here. Not right off the boat. We got somebody come. Well, let's go to Betsy in Stoughton first, and then we'll get another question from the audience. Hi, Betsy. Thank you for calling.
Oh, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I love your show, and I'm really happy that it's repeated on Saturdays.
Right.
My question is about poison ivy. It seems to have spread into some of my flower and vegetable gardens. I live in the country, so it's impossible to eradicate all of it, but what's a safe way to get rid of it, safe for me as well as safe for my plants and all the insects in the ground, because I'm not real wild about real strong chemicals.
Okay, would you repeat what you're trying to get rid of again?
Poison ivy.
Poison ivy, okay. Well, I had enough exposure to that. I was out in Kansas for about 6 years, and we found it popping up in the lawns and throughout the community. Short of wearing gloves and pulling it, the other option is using an herbicide such as Roundup, potentially the glyphosate product or other brush be gone products if it's to any great extent. We tended to use the glyphosate, and you spot spray it on the little seedlings as they come up, and it doesn't that pretty well takes care of them. They're pretty persistent if they get much larger than seedlings, so it gets to be a challenge. If you have, you know, somebody that's not sensitive to it, have them go out and pull it.
All right, there you have it. Thanks for calling, and let's take another question from the audience. Hi.
Hi, I'm Carol from Oshkosh.
Hi, Carol.
And I have two questions. One of our neighbors has a black walnut tree right near our garden, and from past experience, I know things like tomatoes and peppers do not do well near that tree. Are there some vegetables that definitely would not be affected? And then my second question is, a coworker is starting some raised bed gardens, and she's wondering if there's a good soil blend that would be better to use in those types of things. And she's going to plant vegetables and flowers.
Okay. As far as the black walnut's concerned, the grass-type plants, such as corn, seems to be pretty okay with black walnuts. I don't have a good list in front of me, and off the top of my head, that's pretty much the only thing I can recommend trying. A lot of our, you know, the broadleaf vegetables tend to be fairly sensitive. I think there likely is a list out there of things that are bit more less sensitive to it, and so I would check with your extension office or do an online search for that, and you could come up with some things that tend to function a little bit better under those conditions.
Yeah, we have a list. There's a list through in the UW Extension. You know, let me throw this out. You mentioned raised beds. That's another potential solution to the black walnut situation, if I'm not mistaken, to have a raised bed, as long as you keep the roots from going up into the raised bed area.
Right, and as far as dealing with that, you could lay down a barrier, you know, to help discourage roots from coming through. But black walnut tends not to, you know, send up shoots. The problem would be if you're under the canopy of that tree, you're still going to have leachate coming from the leaves when it rains, and the leaves falling in there, so you're not going to get away from it. It's out there. It gets in the soil. It's not only from the roots, but it's from the fruit and the leaves as well. But if you're far enough from the drip line and you're still having problems, you could potentially do that. That'd be a good solution to work towards. As far as soil mixes for raised beds, it tends to be a good situation if you can take maybe a third of your local soil, depending on whether it's heavy clay or sand or whatever, and then mix in some compost depending on what you have for local soils. If the soil is pretty good, I'd still recommend adding some compost to it, because that will make your soil a lot easier to work. And the biggest concern is that you get good drainage. And obviously, when you're building a raised bed, you're going to improve that drainage, even if you were to throw, red clay in there. But from the standpoint of having to till that soil and work it, I wouldn't recommend just going with straight clay soil.
And Mandy from Heartland knows the name of that vine with the white flowers, and she says it's a carrion, C-A-R-R-I-O-N, carrion vine. It's a native plant, not invasive. So there's you can look that one up online, take a look at carrion vine, and match it up. It's a native plant. And Phyllis from Milwaukee County recommends putting coffee grounds in garden to enrich your soil, and it also reduces household waste. And I've heard that before as well, Ken. And on those tips, I got to remind you, you're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're broadcasting from the Midwest Renewable Energy Association Fair. What a wonderful fair, with a great audience here in the tent with us today. Hey, thank you very much. A huge audience. The tent is full. I'm really pleased to have everybody here today, and pleased to have with me Ken Schrader. Ken, the Portage County Extension Ag Agent, so happy to have him here to answer your gardening questions. If you have a call, if you have a question, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or email us at, no, don't email us. Try not to email us. Oh, you could try, I guess, but we might not get through, because we're not back in the studio. So just give us a call at 800-642-1234. But those in the audience can ask questions, and we have somebody from the audience with a question right now. Hi.
Hi, I'm Judy from Iola.
Hi, Judy.
3 years ago, I discovered an unusual plant in my garden. I did not weed it out. Later asked an expert from the university in Stevens Point, and he told me it was a pokeweed, and it does not belong here. It survived the winter. I now have 7 plants this spring, and I had someone from Missouri identify it this morning as a pokeweed. We talked a lot about it. How did it get there, and why is it surviving?
Well, boy, there's any number of reasons. Now, where'd you say it was from?
The pokeweed really grows further south, like okay. Missouri. Yes.
Well, there. You know, I suppose there are birds that fly from Missouri to Wisconsin. That might be one way, Ken.
Yeah, other possibilities as far as it getting here, plant material, depending on if you bought some nursery stock or other bedding plants that may have been produced south further, and it may be established in other areas that with our warmer, you know, winters these last couple years, it has been fairly warm, and as far as survival, it doesn't surprise me at all. Especially when we have good ground cover the last two, good snow cover the last two winters. So, but I would take that out and get rid of it.
Yeah, it's
you don't want to keep it.
You don't want to keep it. Jade in Eau Claire will give you a chance. Hi, Jade.
How are you, gentlemen, this morning?
Well, we're doing great, and thank you for calling. What can we do for you?
I actually have some tomato plants out in my garden, and I would like to bring them in this fall so that I could possibly have fresh tomatoes throughout the winter. But I'm wondering if I need to do anything special with those plants. I know some things, they have to basically become frozen and then start growing again so they believe that it's spring. Do you know what I would need with those tomato plants?
Tomatoes aren't going to do that, I don't think, Ken.
No, tomatoes are an annual plant, and if you have a variety that's indeterminate, meaning that it continues to produce blossoms as the time goes on, not producing a big flush of fruit and being done, there is a possibility you could bring it in and extend the period that it's producing fruit. The challenge will be that you're going to have a hard time providing enough light. When you bring that in from outdoors, that's a big change in light levels, even though it doesn't seem to be that to us, but to the plant, there's a lot lower light levels indoors. And then even if you supply a lot of light, you may run across challenges with insect issues that you brought in from outdoors that when it was outside didn't seem to be a big problem. You bring it in and there's you don't have the wind and the rain going on, creates a couple more challenges. But if you've got a nice space that you can put it in, it's sunny, go ahead and give it a try.
Why not?
Yeah, especially if you've got it in a container, it's easy enough to move in. But eventually it's just going to tire out.
So there you have it, Jade. Thank you very much for calling. Let's take another question from the audience. Hi.
Yeah, hi. This is Bill from De Pere.
Hey, Bill.
Milkweed is taking over my vegetable garden, and I haven't found anything that will control it.
Milkweed. And it's great for monarch butterflies.
I realize that.
Absolutely. I was going to ask. So do you have a nice flush of monarchs around the area? It's a favorite food of theirs. As far as getting rid of it, leave some grow in the outer areas, please. But it's not that difficult a plant to pull out and dig out. You know, it's not very aggressive, so that would be the best approach over trying to use some weed killer to take it out. If you want to resort to that route, you could use a glyphosate product, but that kills anything in the area. You have to be careful how you apply it. Otherwise, it's a broadleaf weed, and several applications of a weed be gone or 2,4-D dicamba type product should help knock it down. But
I'd pull it.
Yeah, I would say the same thing, Larry.
Okay. Thanks for that question. Let's go to Rich in Minocqua next. Hi, Rich.
Hi, Larry. Again, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
As I was walking through the woods this morning, I noticed on some maple leaves what I am assuming are egg sacs. They were about an eighth-inch length, tubular in shape, and kind of light orange color, and I was just wondering if Ken could identify those.
Yeah, they're just a type of maple gall, and yes, they are caused by a very tiny areified mite-type insect. They are not doing any damage to that tree. They are, you know, changing the aesthetics of it a little bit, but my recommendation is don't worry about them. They're not going to create any problems at all. Just let them run their life cycle. It's perfectly normal.
All right. Thanks for that question. Let's take another question from the audience. Hi.
Hi, my name's Wendy. I'm from Greenbush.
Hi, Wendy.
I have some mint that's taking over an area of ground cover, and I haven't been able to keep up with pulling it. Is there some other ground cover that I can plant there after I pull it out that will take over a little more strongly?
Yeah. Mint is really tough sometimes to get rid of.
That will outcompete the mint, you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Let's see. Creeping Charlie?
No, thanks.
No, I don't think you want that. I think you'd prefer the mint. Yes. If you're going to take out the ground cover anyways, I'd recommend glyphosate and cleaning house, and then just starting with whatever you want to put in there would be the simplest. If it's in a lawn area, you could try to take it out with 2,4-D dicamba-type products there. But it's going to take several applications as far as what's going to compete with it. Anything is going to have a challenge, but if you can use a product to an herbicide that will kill it, then you're going to have a good start. And if you maintain that, whatever ground cover you put in there and get it going without the weeds, should be able to outcompete it with no problem.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for that question. Now, a little technical difficulty here for the moment, so our phone screen is down, but we'll have that back up in just a second, and we'll know who to go to next. In the meantime, let's take another question from the audience. And there we go. Rick Rare is helping
us. Hi, I'm Alan. I'm from Stillwater, Minnesota, and I garden at a community garden, and we have a lot of gophers coming in and ground squirrels. Some gardeners are building cages that go into the ground a couple feet so the gophers can't go into that area. But there's a lot of people in the garden that don't want to use chemicals or trapping them. Do you have any suggestions? Like, I've heard elderberry branches, you know, into the hole. We're using coyote urine as well. Anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is a tough one. Aside from cats.
Yeah, dogs and cats and other domestic animals tend to discourage them from being around. Our primary recommendation is trapping to take them somewhere else, and there's probably nobody that wants them. But, in a wildlife area, potentially, it's okay. And so I would look more towards trapping. They are difficult once they get established to discourage them from being there. And the people that are resorting to digging in and putting wire underneath, I mean, that's obviously fairly effective, but it's also very time-consuming and a lot of work. So as far as other remedies, your guess is as good as mine. I don't have any good ones to look at to keep them out.
Cats or dogs, but then you've got to keep them there. It's a problem too.
Yeah, that's right. They kind of the dogs like to sleep at night, and the cats, well, who knows where they're off to at night.
Phyllis and Hamburg, your turn. Hi, Phyllis.
Hello.
Thanks for calling.
Siberian iris are my favorite plant, and
I keep dividing
them and moving them and getting new ones. And some of them bloom profusely. Some of them don't bloom at all.
Yeah.
And I don't know what to do. What I'm doing wrong. Sometimes they'll be two, you know, couple yards away. One will be full of buds, and the other one will have none.
Okay, now, and these are from the same plant that you divided?
Uh-huh.
Yes, okay. Possibilities are that depending on how aggressive you were when you divided that plant, that one plant is still regenerating a root system and spending more energy doing that and not having enough to bloom. Eventually, it will bloom, I would recommend that you make sure that it has enough water, and not too much water, obviously, but give it a little TLC, maybe a little bit of fertilizer. Don't do that too late in the year, but a little fertilizer may go a long ways there, and just patience.
So there you have it. Thanks very much for that question. We got another quick question here from the audience.
Hi, I'm Cindy from Custer. I have a question. In the fall of 2007, I collected probably 300 seeds off of mature asparagus ferns, planted them that fall, and was amazed they all came up the next spring in my garden. Well, what normally happens in the fall is when they disperse naturally, each pod probably has like 8, 9, 10 seeds in it. I planted each pod. Now I have a number of shoots coming out in one area. And I don't know if I should be thinning them or let survival of the fittest take over. Any recommendation? They're very prolific. They're doing very well.
We will ponder that. We'll think about that for a while, because we need to take a quick break here, and we'll be back with an answer from our guest, Ken Schrader, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio with Garden Talk from the Midwest Renewable Energy Association Fair. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Ken Schrader, Portage County Extension Agricultural Agent, talking obviously about all kinds of things relating to the vegetables and the flowers and the lawns and the trees. And certainly we welcome your questions and comments. A great audience today from the Midwest Renewable Energy Fair. Thank you. Doing a wonderful job asking questions and listening attentively and offering some solutions from time to time as well. So it's always fun to have them here. And again, I'll remind the audience, if anybody with a question, raise your hand. Rhonda Fanning will be there with a microphone, and you can ask your question. In the meantime, though, we've got Bill from Mineral Point, who has been waiting a while. So let's go to Bill. Bill, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hey, Larry. It's good to be on your program. And as I told the person who I talked to first, I was calling with a little suggestion for the lady with the poison ivy problem, or for anyone who has something they want to get rid of that is embedded in stuff they don't want to get rid of. So it's very hard to use a spray or anything else if there's the slightest, you know, drift in the wind. So I learned this many years ago. It's called the Glove of Death. A wonderful, wonderful name.
Yep.
And what you do is you get a very impermeable glove, put it on your hand, and then you put a cotton glove over the impermeable glove, and then you put a little of the herbicide onto the fingertip of your glove, and then you reach in and just stroke the leaves of the poison ivy or whatever else you want to get rid of, and you won't have any worry about the drifting spray or, you know, getting things on your other plants.
That will do it. And Ken, that's you recommend that as well.
Yes, absolutely. It is a very effective way of spot treating plants when you don't want to take everything else around it out.
All right. Thank you very much for that question. And we, you know, before we went to our break, we had a question from another person from the audience, I think. I've forgotten now. And Ken, you got an answer? What was the question, and then what's the answer?
Sure. Okay, we're really putting me to the test now. Are you remembering anything or not? No, the question was in regards to asparagus and collecting the seeds and sowing them out. And seems to be they were sown out and sown out kind of thick, and thicker than what you'd like to see. So the question is, do I thin or do I not thin? I'd recommend thinning. Pull some of the extras out, because the problem is when you let plants, especially when they're that young, you know, you don't want them to be too close together. A certain amount of it, they'll just adapt and do what they need to do. Nature will take its course. But I'd recommend thinning it out if you have plenty, and that way the plants have less chance of having disease issues and less stress from individual plants competing. So Go ahead and pull some of those extras out, or just cut them off. Simple way of doing it. So,
All right, there we have that answer. Let's go to Tammy in Milwaukee next. Hi, Tammy.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have questions about my grandmother's 40-year-old canna bulbs that I now have, and I've been growing for a couple years now. Last winter, I pulled them, as I do every winter, and I put them in buckets with some peat moss and leave them in my basement. Well, last winter, they didn't do so hot, and being heirloom plants that I'd love to keep, you know, I was devastated to find that half of them didn't survive. So is there a better way to store those, or what's the proper way to store them?
Well, you're on the right track as far as storing them. The challenge is, you know, when you put them in the peat moss, that you don't have it too wet.
Yeah.
Make sure it's not too moist. You know, it can be damp but not wet. And also I'd recommend kind of, you know, shaking the soil off and make sure you're not bringing in too much soil when you put them in that container. And don't make it airtight. Make sure there's air exchange available to those canna bulbs when they're out there. So I think, you're on the right track. Maybe
yeah.
You got a little bit too wet this last fall when you put them in.
Thank you very much for that question. And let's see, we may have a question from the audience. Let's take a question from the audience here.
Don from Stevens Point.
Hi, Don.
My wife tried to buy some castorberry seeds this spring and year. None available. Are they outlawed or what's even? We know the poisonous plant, but what's the problem with this availability?
Well, they are a poisonous plant. I don't know for sure whether they're outlawed or not. I don't have the answer to that, but you really shouldn't be planting them out. They are poisonous, very, very poisonous, as a matter of fact, in particular the seeds. So if there are any young children that come by and they're happen to be see those seeds on there, it's an interesting pod as it develops, and they may play with them and suffer serious consequences. So I'd recommend not even pursuing trying to find any simply because they are poisonous.
That may be why you can't find them, too.
I think that's probably the reason why. If you try hard enough, I'm sure you could find some somewhere, but I'd recommend not.
Ron in East Troy. We'll go to you now. Hi, Ron.
Hi. I have a problem. I have an area that I just ignored, and it's mainly burdocks and nettles about 4 to 5 feet high, and there could be anything else under the sun in there. I'd like to turn some pigs in there to try to get it worked up, and I was concerned about the welfare of the pigs. Will they automatically avoid stuff that would be bad for them, or would that work for me?
Well, it depends on how confined they are to that space. They may look for something a little bit better. They may also dig up right next to it and use them for shade if they're tall enough. So it depends on how many options you give them to not go there. But pigs like digging, and you're right. You know, let them in there. And you really haven't got anything to lose if they choose not to dig hard enough to destroy those burdocks. You haven't really lost anything. You've got the soil tilled up around it, and you can go in there and dig them out yourself.
Yeah. Not a bad experiment, I'd say. Thanks for calling. Let's take another question from the audience.
Hello, I'm Emma from Madison.
Hi, Emma.
Hi. I know you've never had this question, but I have a terrible case of thistles, and the only way I've been able to kill them is one by one with vinegar, and I use something to sort of channel the vinegar right to the plant, because if I just pour it on, it doesn't seem to kill them. But the thistles are growing faster than what I can kill them. And so I'm wondering if you just mow them down after a while, will that destroy them? Or what can I do?
Yeah, what kind of thistles? Do you know what kind of thistles they are? No idea. Okay.
Yeah, and that's going to make a difference. Yes, absolutely. If you mow them down and not allow them to flower, that will obviously reduce the seed production. But if it is a perennial and like Canadian thistle, that one actually propagates also by underground roots. And so if you're seeing that, if you've got the roots, then just continuing to mow it down is not going to get rid of it. It may stress it a little bit, but really they are pretty good at producing this little rosette of leaves, and you're going to have a hard time getting rid of it. So I'd suggest digging and pulling and working it that way if you're against using herbicides. Otherwise, we go back to our favorite being glyphosate or using a 2,4-D dicamba type product, which will work, but it takes may take a little bit longer. You need to be persistent on that.
That takes that's going to take you a few applications, not just one. It's not going to do it. So you're going to probably have to do 3, 4 maybe applications.
Yeah, from a commercial standpoint, we've got things that are a lot more effective than that, but generally we don't want to be using that in our gardens.
Okay, good question. Let's go to Paula in Janesville next. Hi, Paula.
Hi. I've got a might be an unusual question. I maybe ought to know this, but there's a raspberry tree outside, and it's not ripening completely. I mean, there's a few berries here and there, but the rest of them are green. It grows near the sunny side of the street. And I'm also curious, if you cut the branches with the raspberries that are green off, will they ripen if you lay them out in the sun or something?
It says, now you're talking about a tree, correct?
Yeah.
It's not a raspberry.
There is a tree, though, that
about this time of the year, it drops, and what look like raspberry, and the birds love them once they're ripe, but they're not something that we would eat, I don't think.
Well, I mean, if it is a mulberry tree, I think that's where Larry was going with that. That is a tree form. It does produce fruit that look a lot like raspberries. As far as and you can eat those, but the birds love them and probably get to them a lot sooner than you do in a lot of cases, and they spread and make more trees around the area. It's actually somewhat invasive, so keep that in mind. As far as if they fall and they're green, the chances are they're not going to ripen very well, and I don't know of any good way to encourage that to ripen. Once they fall off the tree, it's not like the tomato where you can pick that green and it will continue to ripen. Those types of fruit don't tend to do that.
We have a mulberry next to in the property next to ours, and so we get. I can tell you right now that they stain quite a bit when they come down after they're ripe. They really will stain. So there have been times I would have liked to have eliminated that tree.
Don't hesitate too much. Take it out. Yeah. Put something better in there.
Unfortunately, it's in my neighbor's tree. So, but it does bring in some Baltimore Orioles from time to time. So that's a good thing. Let's take another call from Cheryl in Boscobel this time. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, Cheryl. I have a couple questions, actually. I have some beautiful bleeding hearts, white and red or pink. After they've bloomed, they make a seed pod that looks actually like a little miniature green bean. If I pull those off and dry them before the birds get them, can I replant those next spring?
Sure you can. You may not get back what you have there, but that's okay. Go ahead and harvest them, let them dry, and replant and enjoy what you get.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for calling. I should give the number again. If you'd like to join in, we have some open lines. We'll get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. Let's back to the phones and turn to Barb in Lone Rock. Hi, Barb.
Hello?
Hi, Barb. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I have another iris question. And I heard the lady earlier, but I have hundreds of irises, and I divide them periodically and everything. I had maybe 16 of them bloom this year. Is there something I can do for them? Or
have you recently divided them? Or tell me a little bit more about,
periodically.
The issue with
they're
them.
All across the back of the yard, and every year I'll take a clump of them and divide them, and, you know, so I'm not dividing them all at once. But regardless of whether they're the ones I've divided or the older ones, they just they didn't bloom this year.
Hmm. And are they being having a fair amount of competition from grass or other weeds or?
Not really. It's I try and keep the weeds out of there, and they.
How did the plants look in general? Are the leaves normal amount of foliage there, or there seem to be reduced foliage, reduced shoots coming out?
They look pretty healthy. Maybe I need to divide them more. I don't know. That's what I was wondering.
Yeah, I mean, if those clumps are very dense and tight, you can have some reduced blooms over time that way. And when you do look at these the rhizomes, take a close look and see if you may have iris borer. That's a common problem with the German iris, which I'm assuming you have, rather than the Siberian iris. Look at that. And then also I would think about, are they getting enough sunlight, a fair amount of light in there? When you start shading these plants, if you've got a tree that's kind of taking over the area, it's going to reduce their blooms as well. And lastly, I guess, just think about when was the last time they had any fertilizer to any extent.
Yeah.
So I'm not like here on the sands where if we don't apply fertilizer on a fairly regular basis, nitrogen in particular, plants go down fairly fast. Out your way, I don't think you have quite that problem. But those are some of my thoughts on possibilities.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And let's see, we have any questions from the audience? Well, before we go back to the audience, let's go to Michelle in Stoughton. Michelle, hi.
Hello.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
We are having some issues with earwigs settling and nesting in our lettuce and in our flowers and all over the place. And so we were just curious to know if there's a way to get rid of them that's safe and won't harm our lettuce. Finding some conflicting information on the internet about what they're doing to the plants, if they're eating the plants or if they're just nestling in there. So we were just curious to know what we could do.
Well, likely they're just looking for cover. They tend to like to crawl underneath things, especially during the heat of the day, and they're hiding out. My guess is they aren't doing a lot of damage to your lettuce, and so. And the only thing I'd recommend is if you avoid having them be too moist during the night in the area of your plants, and that may help a little bit. I think being in a vegetable garden, you don't want to go to any other extent to try to get rid of them. But
no.
Just try to provide less encouragement for them to be there.
You can lay a board out there during the. During the day and during the evening, they'll get in there. Maybe they might, slugs will certainly go underneath, and then you can just throw them in some soapy water, pull them out, and open them, tip the board over, and pick them up. And I know most people don't like handling them for some reason.
No, exactly. They're just kind of a weird-looking insect with those little pinchers, and they're not too exciting to handle.
But that's one way to get rid of them. Let's take another question from the audience here in the tent. Hi.
Hi there. This is Ann from Stevens Point.
Hi, Ann.
I have trouble germinating sweet corn sometimes. It seems I plant them, and I'll get a section that come up and others that don't, and it's spotty. And I'm wondering what my problem is. Is it perhaps the depth that I'm planting these? Any suggestions about corn germination?
Okay. As we head with that popcorn question, this year is no surprise that there is not real good germination. Sweet corn, in particular, if you have the super sweet variety, tends to be a little bit more slow to germinate, a little more difficult when it doesn't have ideal conditions. We've had very cool springs up to this point, and so even in our commercial sweet corn production fields, we see some reduced germination out there, so I'm not real surprised. I would check, the depth of the sweet corn tends not to be, I mean, yes, if you get it way too deep, it's not going to come up. Go out there and look where it's missing and see if you have seed there. As same with the, with the popcorn issue where you may have gotten into the point where there was a seed corn maggot and did some damage to the seed. But that's the main thing to look for. Pay attention to your watering. When they start germinating, here, it gets pretty dry in the area quite easily. So look at that.
Inch a week in this area? Or is...
Yeah, we like to see an inch to an inch and a half. You know, this time of year, an inch is good. We get the middle of summer and it's super hot and the dry winds start coming in. Then we look at needing inch to an inch and a half of rain on the sands.
Okay. Good question. Let's go to Jerry in Green Bay next. Hi, Jerry.
Hi there. This question is in regards to daylilies that I'm growing in pots, and I want to jump them into larger pots. And my question is it too late to split them when I jump them?
You can split them any time of year. You know, they're of course not when they're frozen in the wintertime, but otherwise you can go ahead and split them. I'd suggest waiting until after they bloom this year. You know, enjoy the blooms, because if you start separating out those plants, you're going to stress the blooms and get less bloom to enjoy. Yeah. So, the important thing with dividing any plants is to pay attention to the watering after you've divided them. The most stressful time to divide any plant is when it is flowering or setting fruit, and in the middle of summer when we've got such warm temperatures and it gets to be challenged anyway. So spring, fall is always a good time to do that. It makes it a lot easier. But again, if you're a good gardener and you pay attention to the plants, you can divide them throughout the year.
All right. Thanks for that call. Let's take a question from the audience.
From Wisconsin Rapids, and earlier this year on public on PBS on TV, they talked about using horticultural vinegar instead of herbicides, the chemical herbicides. But where can you get horticultural vinegar? The only source I found would be like buying a great big barrel of it, and I don't want that much.
And it would smell kind of strong out there if you used that whole barrel at one time, I think. So I don't have an answer for you as far as where to find it. I would be happy to see if I can find something out for you, but offhand, I don't know.
Did you check online, by the way? Or? Oh, you don't have a computer. Go to the library, local library. That's a great place to go. They'll even help you get online if you don't know how to use the computer, and you can check that way. But also, Ken, you're going to look into this?
I will look into that.
Because you're going to get more questions about it now that it's been raised. Horticultural vinegar. And we haven't really discussed that on the program in the past, so I'm not sure I can. I know I can't tell you where to find it. but we'll see what we can do. Boy, this has been great. Marion from Windsor recommends on the cannabulbs. She dries them off, lays them in a cardboard box to remove the dirt and dry them, and then she puts them in a paper bag and in a dark closet. So that's probably as good a way as any. And Ken, I want to thank you so much. It's been a wonderful 90 minutes here. Ken Schrader, our Portage County Extension Agricultural Agent, based in Stevens Point at the Ruth Guilfrey Center in Stevens Point. They moved away from the courthouse, so they're now at the Ruth Guilfrey Center. Been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us today.
You're very welcome, Larry. I appreciate it. Enjoy it. And last year was my first year on the show, and I was scared to death.
Nothing to be afraid of.
As I found out, the people are very respectful, and you actually have time to answer the questions. So
that's a nice thing, too.
I thoroughly enjoy it, absolutely. So I'd like to, in close, mention that if you're hungry tomorrow morning, come out to our Portage County Dairy Breakfast. And also coming up, we have the Portage County Master Gardeners program going on, so I hope Larry didn't mind me giving a plug for that. That's the Garden Parade, July 17th and 18th.
And thanks to this great audience here at the Midwest Renewable Energy Association Fair. Stay with us. Lots in store.